C2A. Number 12B.
Yes, so we see that working out our true manhood as idea is not just a path of flowers, but a path of thorns. But it's only a path of thorns, really, for the mortal mind and the human mind, not for the divine mind. We come to the next subtone, life, which goes over two pages. You see it's longer than most of the main tones, so something big must be there. And always can see that if Mrs. Eddy takes more lines, more words, more text, really to explain something, then it is that she puts more accent on it, that she sees there a big problem. And so we come to truth as life, the individual truth, as she has said, that Jesus represented the individual ideal of truth. Now we come to that. First in the list of Christian duties, truth, he taught his followers the healing power of truth and love. He attached no important ceremonies. You see at once the tone of life and the counterfeit of it, dead ceremonies. So we must have something to take its place, something that is of the nature of life. It is the living Christ. So you have dead ceremonies, living Christ as a fact about it, the practical truth. Can you see practical life truth? Which makes Jesus the resurrection and the life. It's very clear that now she speaks about the subtone of life. I think there is no possibility to misunderstand it. To allow to all who follow him in deeds. Obeying his precious precepts, again falling back to principle, obedience to principle, and obeying the precepts, that's now the method of life, following his demonstration as far as we apprehend it, again that warm touch that we only have to do it as far as we apprehend it, that God never demands something more than what we can do, never demands a higher understanding than the understanding we have. We drink of his cup, life, partake of his bread, life, we eat it, are baptized with the purity, and at last we shall rest, sit down with him in the full understanding of the divine principle which triumphs over death. So we have here, if we go back, we have here a tone of life and truth, that is truth in the subtone of life, saying that that truth which embodies the Christ must be a living truth, must be practiced. It is that which lives us, and as it is a practical truth, it becomes our new life, the resurrection, and the life, and then we follow his deeds. And so we drink of his cup. That's now she begins to introduce here really the sacramental Eucharist, partake of his bread, and are baptized. Yes, then the next paragraph referring to the materiality of the age. Jesus said, the hour cometh, and now is. You get again a sense, now is, of life. When the true worshipper shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. So here we get the practice of it. Always life is that which goes back to the Creator, draws everything from the source of life, from the well of life. Whatever we do in life, we draw it from God. No, we don't draw it from out of ourselves. We go back to the source. And so worship the Father in spirit and truth. again foreseeing the persecution which would attend the signs of spirit. You see, again now, it goes over in life, that if we follow that will bring on us the persecution, which is the counterfeit of going along the way of life. Jesus said that they shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he does God's service. Well, religion has that over and over and over. Religious history is full in every religion, not only in the Christian religion. Every religion is full of this law that they shall put you out of the synagogue. It's always that sense of excommunication. You know that we go through that too. We all have been excommunicated from the branch church and then from the mother church. Naturally, I let the church excommunicate me. I didn't go out of the church because I wanted them to have the responsibility for doing that. They must be responsible for their acts. I didn't hand in my resignation because I was sticking to Christian Science. And that's my right to stick to Christian Science. And there is no organization and no people that can really prohibit that. And so if I stick to Christian Science, then I'm a Christian Scientist. And I leave it to others then to excommunicate me. So that happened to us, that happened to Dolly, that happened to dozens and dozens, hundreds of people. That sticking to the truth, one has to face that persecution which shows, among others, by excommunication. But not only that, yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he does God's service, all through all religions. Even in the field of sciences, you can see that. That they can persecute a physicist or a chemist to that point where he goes out of life, where he breaks down or makes suicide. We only don't know all these biographies, or we would be well aware that this is a general belief that the pioneer has to be killed, and if you kill him, you do God's service. And it has nothing malicious about it. It has just to do with blunt dumbness, with ignorance. That's all. It isn't something malicious. And these things shall they do unto you. Why do they do that? Because they have not known the Father, nor me. Can you see? As she also says, this is nothing malicious. Nothing malicious. It's just blunt ignorance. And therefore, we know that Mrs. Eddy says in the chapter on practice that it is much more difficult to overcome ignorance than sin. And sin already is quite difficult to overcome, much more difficult than disease. So actually it's easier to overcome disease, not so easy to overcome sin, already quite tough, but boy oh boy, to really overcome ignorance, that's a job. That's a real job. It is as if one would run all one's life against the wall. They have not known the Father. See, there is nothing malicious about it. It's ignorance. Well, how have those first scientists in the Middle Age, like Galilei and Kepler and Copernicus and all these people, how were they received? Well, we know the story of the Middle Ages. We know the persecution of the scientists, not only of the religious people, but of the scientists. Why? Because they don't know. They were not really malicious. They always gave them a chance and say, well, we don't put you on the stake if you just say that you are sorry to have said that and that you don't believe in it and everything is okay. We don't want to kill you because we like to kill you. See? We must see that ignorance is the great enemy. not malicious animal magnetism. That's child's play. To handle a malicious animal magnetism is child's play against ignorance. Yeah, and that ignorance comes because they don't know the Father. So, we come to the sacramentum. The side note is sacred sacrament, and we get the Last Supper picture here. In ancient Rome, a soldier was required to swear allegiance to his general. The Latin word for this oath was sacramentum. So sacramentum means allegiance, means unity with. And our English word sacrament is derived from it. That's how the word can be explained. Now comes the religious side of it. Among Jews, it was an ancient custom for the master of a feast to pass each guest a cup of wine. But the Eucharist does not commemorate a Roman soldier's oath, nor was the wine used on convivial occasions, and in Jewish rites, the cup of our Lord. So first of all, she wants to establish that the cup of our Lord was not, which as a sacramentum has nothing to do with the soldier's allegiance to his general, nor has it to do with that rite of the Jews passing around the cup. It had to do with something else. What is it? The cup shows forth his bitter experience. So now we get to the tone of life. The cup which he prayed might pass from him, though he bowed in holy submission to the divine decree. So this is the allegiance that is shown, that Jesus was willing to drink the cup and subordinate himself to the divine decree. She goes on, as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to his disciples and said, take, eat. This is my body. The bread is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink ye all of it. So that's just the quote from the Bible. And now her interpretation, the true sense is spiritually lost if the sacrament is confined to the use of bread and wine. So we just show now over two passages where the term sacrament comes from, what it means in the Jewish rite, and what it has meant in the Last Supper. And saying that we must get the spiritual sense of it, and then only we really find the true meaning of it. The disciples had eaten, yet Jesus prayed and gave them bread. Again, it's very nice to see. First he prayed, and then came the Eucharist. We must always start with prayer, where we find our strength, where we find our authority. That is our source from which we can live and draw really our strength. And then we can stand up, get up from our knees and go and do things in the atonement, the Eucharist, and therefore, so Jesus prayed and gave them bread. This would have been foolish in a literal sense, but in its spiritual signification, it was natural and beautiful. Jesus prayed. He withdrew from the material senses to refresh his heart with brighter, with spiritual views. So again, she shows again and again, in order to go out into the world and really eat the bread and really make the truth yourself, so that the truth is your practical truth, you first have to build up in your consciousness through prayer enough resources, enough spiritual values that you really can go out into the world and stand the storm of the world. So the Passover, which Jesus ate with his disciples in the months Nisan, on the night before his crucifixion, was a mournful occasion, a sad supper taken at the close of day, in the twilight of a glorious career with shadows fast falling around. Can you see the gloomy picture? Can you feel the gloomy pictures he depicts here? That Last Supper was a mournful occasion. And this supper closed, that's now interesting, that this supper closed forever, not just for once, forever Jesus' ritualism or concessions to matter. This was the point where he had to prove now that he had not the dual nature, one from God as the Father and one from her mother taking part in the earthly condition of birth. Now he came to the point, he lived up to that point constantly with those two factors, the dual nature in Jesus. And he could see that he would have to prove that life alone is spirit, or that spirit alone is life. And therefore he had to come to the point where he closed forever his concessions to matter. That was at the point of life. He is now about to prove that life is in and of spirit and not of matter. The paragraph goes, or the tone goes on to the next paragraph. His followers, sorrowful and silent, anticipating the hour of their master's betrayal, partook of the heavenly manna, which of old had fed in the wilderness the persecuted followers of truth. Can you see again life as truth? Again that question, that as long as we believe in life in and of matter, that's the persecution. Do you remember how she defined the ones before? I don't think I just can't find it. Oh, yes. Where she said, the determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter is the persecutor of truth and love. So the persecutor is still that we try to see God in matter, try to see the infinite in finite things, and therefore this Last Supper wanted to show the final concession to matter. Line 6, their bread indeed came down from heaven. They were fed divinely. They were supported divinely. The fifth statement in the Lord's Prayer, give us our daily bread. It was the great truth of spiritual being. Can you see again the combination of truth and spiritual being, life, truth as life, healing the sick and casting out error. Their master had explained it all before, and now this bread was feeding and sustaining them. They had borne this bread from house to house, breaking, explaining it to others, and now it comforted themselves. So we have a great sense of the bread that comes from God that always feeds us, so that in those heavy passages in our life, in those mournful occasions, in that struggle of life, we always can fall back and say, now, what is actually supporting me? It's the bread of life, the bread of truth that comes from God. And when goes right back really to the point where one sees nothing really can happen to me. Nothing really can happen to my life. Because life is God, and Jesus proved it that life is God. And so we, in consciousness, we fall back and go to the one God, life, and see that only that which comes from life is actually sustaining and maintaining and supporting and providing me. That on that cannot be persecuted, that cannot be taken away, that cannot be killed. Nothing can kill life. And so we fall back always to that wonderful sense that the whole abundance of being is constantly flowing from life to us more than what we can accept. And so we begin to live by the bread of life. But for this truth of spiritual being, again you have truth, life, their master was about to suffer violence and drain to the dregs the cup of sorrow. You still have that mournful picture. And we remember this mournful picture because afterwards that whole picture brightens up and we only see then the beauty of it. He must leave them with the great glory of an everlasting victory. Everlasting life, victory, truth. Overshadowing him, he gave thanks and said, "Drink ye all of it." Meaning that he could see that he had to go through that point where to bring out his true manhood at the point of life, that he had to see once and for all, I have to resolve the dualistic sense about me, that I have a body. And that life can be killed by killing the body. He had to, afterwards, through the resurrection and ascension, to demonstrate that life cannot be killed, that the body can be killed, but that life can build it up again. And so he appeared after the resurrection again in his bodily condition. And so he said, "This is the cup that I have to drink, but drink ye also of it." He didn't say, "I will do it for you, and then you don't have to do it." He was never a mediator for us that said, "I do it for you." That's the tone of truth as life. We don't want to start with the next one, with truth as truth, which is a terrific sense. But what we can do is just go over that tone of truth again and see that here in that new main subject of truth, Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out that if we entertain a consciousness, if we attain a self-conscious communion with the one truth, like Mary did, and entertain that consciousness communion where we see there is only one truth, and that one truth is a truth about all, and truth can never be destroyed, can never be killed, then I begin to get a certain and definite sense that man as the idea of truth, I come now to truth as mind, that man as the idea of truth is therefore an eternal idea, is therefore something that can never be destroyed. But I have also to see that I have to bring forth that idea within myself. I come to truth as spirit, and that I have to give birth to that idea through a virgin sense, through a virgin mother sense, job is constantly all through my life, not only once, but all through my life, to have a mother sense of that idea, so that I keep it pure, that I love it, that I cherish it, that I tend it, that I see the beauty of it, that I constantly see the promise of it, that I can see the fulfillment of it, the goal of it, that what it is going to achieve. I build up within myself that terrific awe of what is going to happen. And this purity of thought to the idea is that which gives birth to the idea. That begins to unfold within me and brings about something. It does not only need to bring about the true man, it can bring about the solution of every situation that I have to deal with. So that I can see only through that purity can the right idea take form within me and can identify itself. Is that idea weak? Is that idea feeble? Or is that idea great? Is that idea strong? Yes? If I see it as an idea of soul, then I see that the greater controls the lesser. That the right ideas, therefore, will always rebuke what is wrong, will always exclude what is wrong, will always handle that which is wrong. That the greater will always control the lesser, so that I don't need to have any fear that the idea will be swallowed up by animal magnetism, that the idea will be neglected, that the idea will not grow. All that is shut out because I see as an idea of soul, the higher controls the lesser. And I have just to have that terrific trust in the working of the idea and let it work the way the idea wants to work, then that idea will always be a blessing to everybody. If I do that and begin to see that the idea has within itself really the capacity to affirm itself, the capacity to maintain itself, I begin to realize then that this idea is an idea of principle. And not an idea of people, that I have brought forth this idea through a principled attitude. And so I begin to see that within that idea is a lot of spiritual power, that power which will always express itself in harmony in the spiritual realm and harmony in the mortal realm, because the higher controls the lower. But finally, I have to give up that sense there is a universe of idea and a universe of matter, and that there is a constant battle between idea and illusion, between spirit and matter, that I have to give that up finally. And that's the practical application, that's life as truth, which says you have to lay down a sense that there is a material world at all. There is no material world at all. There is no material world to be saved. There is only one thing, namely the one life. And so I come to that point where I give up all concessions to matter and go into that terrific adventure of truth as truth, as we'll see this afternoon, where we really begin to see that if I go into that new adventure of pure spirituality, where truth is only spiritual, not combined with matter, then really the floodgates open, and then the infinite possibilities of truth are unleashed, and can really fulfill the Christ idea. That we'll do this afternoon. Okay.